being here. This is work with my advisor, Laurent, which is published here in this article. So let me tell you what we're going to do and why we're going to do it. So we're going to study the degrees of gravity, the degrees of freedom of gravity on a null surface. By that, I mean, usually in Hamiltonian particle mechanics, you have pairs of configurations and momenta, which are associated to an instant of time. Now in GR, we have no such thing as an instant of time. The best we can do is look at a hypersurface, and there will be degrees of freedom at every point of this hypersurface. So you have Q of x and P of x, where x is a point in the 3D hypersurface B. So what we're going to do here is take the hypersurface to be null and look what are the degrees of freedom. So really what we're looking for is, if you know the ADM variables, induced metric, and this combination of extrinsic curvature, we're looking for the analog of that on a null surface. So why would you want to do that? Because null surfaces are nice for many reasons. Physically, they control the flow of information. They're like membranes for information, because light-like vectors go only through in one direction, so they're like information membranes. So they're very simple in a way. The constraints are tractable. You can formulate an initial value problem for GR on those surfaces. And obviously, there's many applications of this sort of technology to black hole horizons, more general horizons, and to null infinity. So it's interesting to look at null surfaces. What we try to do here is not to fix the diffeomorphism gauge and even keep some of the redundant degrees of freedom. Why would you want to be this general? Again, there's several reasons. It has been understood that not all diffeomorphisms are gauge in some sense if your system has a boundary. So if you have a boundary, which could be null infinity or a black hole horizon, it's very subtle and you have to be careful about diffeomorphism degrees of freedom, so we want to keep track of everything. Besides, it's interesting itself to get the full picture because it gives you some kinematical geometrical intuition of what GR on a null surface is about. So we take the null surface B here to have itself a boundary. So the boundary of it is two-dimensional. Why would you want to do that? Because charges, which generate symmetries or other transformations, live on two-dimensional surfaces. So we don't want to throw away any terms that are going to talk to the charges in some way. Applications of this sort of thinking would be black hole thermodynamics, more general null surface thermodynamics, and it's going to also have implications for the gravity action and its boundary term and its corner term. Okay, so the short outline is I'm going to present you the technology we use, which is the covariant Hamiltonian formalism, talk a bit about the geometry of our setup, then present the results on the null canonical pairs, the null boundary action, and briefly conclude. Okay, so let's go through covariant Hamiltonian field theory. So I told you we have these canonical pairs, Q of x and P of x, for every x in the hypersurface B. So we want to try to express them in terms of the metric. So what's the technology, what's the machinery that enables us to do it? The proxy that knows these degrees of freedom is the presymplectic potential, which is you take the variation of the Lagrangian, and as you know, in order to get the Euler-Lagrange equations, you integrate by parts. So all you do here is you hang on to the boundary term, and this boundary term is the presymplectic potential, and it knows about the canonical pairs, about the Qs and Ps. Schematically, it has the form P delta Q, and there will be a bulk piece, like an integral on B, P delta Q. There might be also some extra structure on the boundary of B, so another pair, canonical pair on the boundary. And there might also be a total variation here. That's just the delta of something, and not P delta Q, but just a total delta. Now there's somewhat of a subtlety here, because I wrote P delta Q, but I could have equally written minus q delta p. And the difference is something which lies in here. It's a total variation, delta pq. So how do I know which are the q's and which are the p's? That's just saying I need to choose a polarization. And the rule we're going to use here is that these q's and the little q's here don't contain any derivatives of the metric. So we want those variables to be straightforward metric components without containing derivatives, which is, I guess, a sensible thing to do. So that corresponds to putting Dirichlet rather than Neumann boundary conditions. Okay, so the geometry of our setup is as follows. We have a null surface, the null surface as a bold line here. And we introduce a field, phi zero, which foliates the null surface into two surfaces, which will be space-like. So by introducing this phi zero, we break covariance a little bit. The reason we have to do this is that the metric on the null surface is degenerate by definition. That's why it's null. So we can't invert it. So in order to be able to calculate, we need to trade this calculability for a bit of covariance. The final expression will be covariant, but the individual terms in it will be not. So this null surface B has a null normal, which is L. We normalize it such that the derivative along L of phi zero is just one. And we'll have a metric Q, which on the two surfaces S, that the null surface is being foliated into. So let me stress again that we're keeping all the lapses, all the shifts, no gauge fixing is going on here. The only restriction on the metric is that B is actually null. That's our starting point. Okay, so let's look at the strategy that we use in order to extract these degrees of freedom. The standard symplectic potential in all its glory for gravity is this beast here. So it's derivatives of the variation of the metric. So, but now remember that the q's shouldn't include any derivatives. So what we have to do is sort of get rid of the derivatives of the variations. The way we do it is as follows. These derivatives could either be tangential to the null surface, in which case we can integrate by parts to produce a boundary term and shuffle the derivative. Or they could be transverse to the null surface, in which case it's a bit more complicated. And we need to vary by parts, so introduce a total variation in order to get rid of these terms. Okay, so I spare you the calculation and we're going to get straight to the results, which are as follows. So first, there's the guy that is well known and that you would expect, the spin 2 degree of freedom, which is the conformal metric. So it doesn't, on the two surfaces that we foliated the null surface into. So it doesn't contain information about the size, just about the shape. And its momentum is the shear, which describes how the shape changes as you move along the null vector L. So this is the well-known, this is why you say that gravity is spin 2. It's been known for a long time in different contexts as this degree of freedom is there. But next we also have a spin 1 degree of freedom, like a vector degree of freedom. So here the configuration variable is just the normal vector to the null surface. And well, more precisely, its variation describes how adjacent cross sections are displaced parallel to each other. So it's something like a linear displacement. And adjoined to it is something we call the twist density. And geometrically, that describes how the two surfaces S change orientation as you move along the null vector. This guy has appeared before in the literature as well, namely as a linear momentum in the membrane paradigm or the horizon fluid analogy by de Moore and other authors. And it's also related to angular momentum of isolated horizons. So it makes a lot of sense that we find this here as a where the momentum are joined to the linear displacement, also from the sort of canonical analysis that ties together nicely. Next, we also have a spin zero, a scalar degree of freedom, which is where the guy which is missing from here, namely the size information, the size of the cross sections of the null surface, which is adjoined to a combination of the expansion and the surface gravity. So this is a dimension-dependent factor here. And the expansion, as the name says, it tells you how the surfaces change size as you move along the null vector. And the surface gravity tells you how the null vector accelerates as you move along the null vector. If you look at the non-expanding case, so you set like a black hole horizon, you set theta equals zero, then you get the pair of area and surface gravity, which is of course well known from black hole thermodynamics, where it becomes the thermodynamical pair of temperature and entropy. And this combination has also appeared before, but here we were able to tie these all together from a single analysis. So I told you there's also going to be a degrees of freedom on the boundary, so the corner of B, the dimension two surfaces, which are also interesting. So the area here appears again of the boundary of the null surface, which is canonically adjoined to something called the redshift factor. And that quantity describes how big the normal plane to the boundary of the null surface is. So it's just the quotient of the full volume element and the volume element of the cross section. So that's also there. So let me summarize what we found here. We found a complete list of the null canonical pairs from a canonical analysis without doing any gauge fixing. And the takeaway message is that gravity is not only spin two, it's spin two, spin one, spin zero, and has corner degrees of freedom. Okay, so I told you we would also find this total variation, and you can translate the total variation and symplectic potential into a boundary and corner action, which then take this form, so the surface gravity appears again, and also the redshift factor, size of normal geometry, appears again. And this result agrees with the previous result by also people here at PI, which was done from a different analysis. Okay, so what are our next plans with this? This is what I'm working on currently. So one thing would be gauge fixing. You know, gravity is spin two. In which sense precisely is this true? So when you try to gauge fix, it turns out diffeomorphism degrees of freedom pop up, which also live at the corner. And they combine neatly with these metric corner degrees of freedom that we have found. And maybe related to soft gravitons at null infinity. Another thing you could do is try to find the weakest condition, boundary condition, you can put on the null surface, such that the degrees of freedom localize purely here at the corners. You could call this a symplectic horizon. And one thing you might want to do is have a horizon which works similar to an isolated horizon, but it's expanding. So it would be a slight generalization of something that's out there. Okay, with that I'm basically at the end. So we found the null canonical pairs of gravity, which are spin two, spin one, spin zero, and boundary corner degrees of freedom. And we obtained a suggestion for boundary and corner action on a null surface. Thank you. Well, it works pretty much in any dimension greater equal 3. The only place where the dimension enters explicitly is here in this prefactor of the expansion, which is the spin zero momentum.
And the dimension there, that's 4 for our space
time? Yeah. So especially in three dimensions, this coefficient here vanishes. So then you don't see the difference between expanding and non-expanding on this level.
Mm-hmm. Do you do time-lapse surfaces?
No, but I think they work pretty much the same way as the ADM, the space-like case, because all you need is that the metric is invertible, and then you can do the same thing up to some signs.
Mm-hmm. So when you said you have different spin 2, spin 1, spin 0 degrees of freedom, mm-hmm. but I'm wondering how many of these are physically propagating? Because we are used mm-hmm. to say that gravity has just spin 2 degrees of freedom, and other gravitational waves are the physical mm-hmm. degrees of freedom. So,
well, let's look at four dimensions and do the counting. So spin 1 are 2 in that case,
yeah.
and spin 0 is 1. And how many diffeomorphisms do we have to fix it? One component of the diffeomorphism is fixed because it must keep the surface null. So you have three components of the diffeomorphism left. And you can use them to eliminate the spin 1 and the spin 0. So then you're left with spin 2. And you get the expected number of propagating degrees of freedom.
So basically,
yeah, they appear at the corner.
They do appear at the corner. There's some interesting.
The question is, are they propagating? They are not mm-hmm. propagating. They are physical in the sense that they are edge modes. They are the parameterized subparameter background.
But you can kill them for gauge fixing, or
not completely.
You can push them to the boundary. That's the best way.
You can delocalize them.
Right.
But you can never keep them. That's the.
What about space-like surfaces? So if you have a parent horizon world line mm-hmm. that is in a dynamical regime, you're going to accrete matter or something, or mm-hmm. radiation. It's mm-hmm. going to be a space-like surface then. The
yeah. Response. That's, I guess, an interesting open problem. Like treating the null case and the space-like case in a unified way. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
I mean the usual thing to
difficult because I mean uh-huh. there's not a smooth transition or something.
No. It's very subtle. I mean the usual thing in the space-like case would be the ADM formalism, right? Where you have the induced metric and this combination of extrinsic curvature. That would be the analog of what we've done in the space-like case. But the transition is something, well, a unified description would be interesting.
Yeah, so
but it's hard to.
America, of course, difficult to distinguish if the black uh-huh. hole is almost settled down, then technically it's still space-like, but there's
I see.
Noise and it appears almost null, and there are lots of infinities to deal with. So, yes,
yeah.
Yes, please.
But there's a key difference that in a space like this, you're left with elliptic constraints. But he hasn't emphasized, which is the reason of people interest of promoting initial data on our surfaces, you can completely resolve the constraint. So it's an unconstraint. The phase space mm-hmm. describing is on the dot.
Oh, I thought you were just not mentioning that.
Well, he was, yeah. So that's why. In some sense, you have a clean separation of what are the degrees of freedom. You can bring that on the null surface. Whereas, that's radically different. Because then,
we can talk about it a bit later.
This is why you can characterize what you mean by nonlinear gravity. Because now it's not buried inside many dimensions.
Yeah.
One way of trying to unify it is the tetrad polynomial.
Yes. Yes.
That's something that the boundary terms you have unified with is kind of all the boundary
terms. Mm-hmm. That's of course simpler in some way. Yeah.
So let's think speaker game.